out. I'd be responsible for.
Oh no, I say, pulling his hands down so he'll look at me. You aren't bailing her out. I can see on your face that you feel responsible for this somehow. Like because she called you that you should run and help her, but you aren't. Shoving away from the vehicle, he crosses his arms over his chest.
I know that. I do. I'm not stupid, Elin.
I know, I say, my hand resting on his bicep. But I hate seeing her put you in the spot.
I don't even know how she got my number.
She can lose it, I say, squeezing his arm before letting go. She's nothing to you. We are your family. The words wash over his face, inch by inch, until they begin to lift the corners of his lips.
Thank you.
Waving my hand in the air, I snort. No thanks needed. You know I love telling you what to do.
No shit.
He laughs, wrapping an arm around my shoulder and starting towards the house.
I don't think this thing with Becca is going to work out, though.
Why? I ask, stopping my tracks. I thought it was going good.
We hung out last night and today a little. She's a great girl.
I nod an exaggerated up and down, agreeing with him. He laughs at my antics, but the heaviness is back in his eyes.
She needs someone that's ready to give her a house and a family. That guy's not me, Elin.
He could be you.
He's not.
He laughs,
My life turns into a mess every time I think about trying to make something out of it.
huffing. I nearly stomp my foot. That's not true.
It is, and it's okay.
His arm goes back over my shoulders again, and we hit the stairs to the house.
I'm just the sidekick, the guy that wanders aimlessly around. I'm okay with that.
He pulls the door open and waits for me to go inside. Before I do, I study his face long and hard. Everyone has a purpose in life, even you.
I wish I could figure it out.
He groans as I walk by. You will, I promise. Starting inside, I'm stopped by the sound of a phone ringing behind me. Looking over my shoulder, I see Ty's phone on the lawn chair by the basketball net. Jogging down the driveway, I snag it. Swiping the screen on, I answer it. Hello? I say breathlessly. Hello? A female voice responds. Is Ty there? Who is this? Tell him it's Nyla. Red. Instantly, I see explosions of red-hot fury. My hand trembles, almost dropping the phone as I catch myself from telling her off. Instead, I give her what she wants. I'll get what I want at the same time. The truth. Just a second, I say, heading towards the house. Before I hit the steps to the patio, Ty pokes his head outside. He starts to say something, but reads my face first. You have a call! I extend my hand, the phone lying in my palm like a dead fish. It's Nyla! Stepping gingerly towards me, the door shutting behind me, he takes the phone. Answer it, I demand.
This is Ty.
He listens to the voice on the other side, smiling easily.
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
My blood pressure soars sky high, my body shaking with fury as I listen to him banter so effortlessly with Nyla, whoever the hell she is,
No, I didn't.
Ty says.
I'll look for it, though.
He turns his back to me.
You're joking.
I listen as he whistles through his teeth, taking off his basketball hat and rubbing the top of his head.
Wow, Nyla, I don't know what to say.
I do, I mutter. The sound of my voice has Ty spinning around to face me. I glare. He laughs. I flip him off. He grabs my wrist and holds me in place.
If not, I'll swing up that way and see you. I'll let you know. Thanks for calling.
He says, his voice super sweet. He tosses me a wink as I jerk my hand away from his.
It was good to see you too. Tell your grandpa thanks again for me.
As soon as the call has ended, my finger is in his chest. You lied to me,
Calm down.
he scoffs, clearly entertained by my reaction. Oh, I'm not calming down. She called you. The girl that you didn't do anything with. I start to march to the door, but his arm is around my waist, dragging me into his arms.
Will you stop acting like this?
He laughs.
What's wrong with you?
My arms pinned to my sides, I struggle to break free. You are what's wrong with me,
Tell you what.
he says, resting his head on top of my head.
Let's make a deal.
Oh, I don't deal with liars.
I don't normally deal with lunatics either, but I'm making an exception tonight, so I guess you can too.
The complete lack of fear or frustration in his voice calms me a little. I stop fighting to pull away.
Let's go in and have dinner with our friends. Then we can go to bed and I will tell you everything you want to know about Nyla Kruger.
He plants a kiss to the back of my head.
And if you're a good girl, I'll let you have my cock after we're done talking.
I doubt I'll want it, I sigh, trying not to succumb to him.
There you go, lying again.
He laughs, swatting me on my ass towards the house. I reach for his hand. He laces our fingers together and we head inside.
Chapter 25. Tie. Her finger skirt over the scars on my back, drifting delicately over the raised skin. Her arm is draped over my side, her cheek pressed into my chest as we lie in silence. She's still mad. I don't think she would be if she knew how adorable she is when she's mad over nothing. It's been entertaining to watch. Warmth surrounds me, and not just from her naked body or the blankets on our bed, or the fact that she has the thermostat set on 76. It's a contentedness, a satisfied, relaxed peace that I'm not sure I've ever felt before.
What are you thinking?
She whispers, her tone thick with sleep. Just how much I love you. She presses a kiss to my sternum. What are you thinking? I ask, closing my eyes and feeling her touch. Her chest rises and falls against mine before she looks up at me.
I don't know how to put it exactly.
Wrapping my arms around her, feeling her silky skin beneath me, I release a heavy breath. Things feel different between us, don't you think?
In what way?
Like, I shrug. I don't know. Like we made it through all this shit and now we're on the other side. We fought the fight and now we're here with the scars to prove it. Nothing could ever get between us now.
Except secrets.
She says wearily. Her hand wallops my chest as I start laughing.
I'm trying, Ty. I'm trying to believe you, but you're making it really hard.
Taking her hand, I move it to my cock. You can say that again. She huffs, still irritated and wanting me to cut to the chase. She's not about to ask. Her pride won't let her. But she'll dance around the topic all night if I let her. I might. The two of us. I sigh.
What?
How do you feel about it being the two of us? I mean, with everything that's happened. I angle myself so I can see your eyes. Do you want it to be the three of us someday? Or four? Or five?
Maybe once we work things out.
She whispers.
Once we're in a better position financially, we can make another appointment and see.
Swallowing hard, she tries to look away, but I don't let her. Finances are one thing, but that's not what's bothering her. I capture her chin with my fingers and hold it in place.
What if I lose another baby?
She asks, fear dripping off each word. I suck in a breath to steady my words before I release them into the universe. Then we do. Because whatever happens is you and me, not you alone. Got it? Her lips tilt in a soft grin, and I kiss her in response. Whatever happens in either of our lives, we do it together. We've proven we don't do well alone. I laugh.
No, we don't.
She chuckles. I can handle whatever happens in my life as long as you're by my side, Elon. And I'll be there holding your hand as you go through yours. And at night, we will end up here in bed together. And we'll laugh about our day and plan the next. Sound like a plan? Her leg lies over mine and she holds my face in her hands. The smile on her face has mine mirroring it.
When did you know you loved me?
She asks. I think back, trying to remember the exact moment. I remember the first day I saw her at her locker and the way my heart fluttered in my chest. I recall listening to her in Spanish class, trying to sound out the words and being obsessed with the way she rolled her R's. The way she laughed in the cafeteria, our locker was always organized, and the way she redid her ponytail 100 times after gym class. It made me love her even more.
Ty?
She asks, touching the tip of my nose, bringing me out of my memories. You know, I say, smiling at her, I don't think there was a time I didn't love you. She beams, rolling me on my back and lying on my chest. I love the way she feels against me, her weight reinforcing her presence in my life. It's true, I say, cupping her ass cheeks in my hands. I think I loved you from the minute I saw you. I know I was obsessed with you since then, but it just morphed into love as I grew older and could understand it.
Do you remember the time you got in a fight with the boy at my softball game in high school?
She laughs.
I was mortified.
I shrug, watching her relive the memory. He He was flirting with you from the sidelines, and then he had his buddy come up to me and tell me he was going to fuck you that weekend. I made sure to get the point across.
You did,
she says, shaking her head.
You were insane.
No, I was marking my territory. Besides, he shouldn't have been talking about you like that. I should have hit him harder. Her head tosses back as she laughs. I wait for her to settle, my hand falling off the side of the bed and beneath the mattress. Pulling out an envelope, I lay it on my chest.
What's this?
She asks. It's something for you. She struggles to sit up and, with a heavy dose of anticipation, she takes the envelope and opens it. After reading the short letter from Mrs. Kruger, she looks inside the envelope again. Her breath catches in her throat as she sees the check.
What is this?
It's $2,000. With wide, beautiful eyes, she looks at me.
Ty!
That's why Nyla called. She wanted to make sure I got it because they lost the tracking and sent it a week ago. Elon's eyes light up. The stress of the situation evaporated. You can apologize now. I chuckle.
$2,000?
She asks, looking at the check again in disbelief. What can I say? I'm a hell of a worker, especially when I'm working for something specific. She eyes me curiously. I pick her up and sit her on top of me so she's straddling me.
This will catch up on our bills,
she says.
It's a godsend.
No.
No?
She laughs. No. I look as deeply as I can into her eyes. My paychecks from Blackwater Coal will catch up on our bills. This money is for you. Her throat moves as she forces a swallow.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't want to wait to move on with our lives. We've wasted enough time stressing, saving money, waiting until the time is right.
You mean...
If you still think we need to see a fertility doctor, make the appointment. Use that money for the copays and whatever.
Really?
She gasps.
Are you sure? I don't know if it's logical, Ty. We could use it on, you know, other things right now.
It makes perfect sense if this is what you want. I rise up and palm the back of her head and bring her mouth to mine. She moans against my lips as I flip her to her back and hover above her. I want to put a baby inside you. I whisper into her mouth. She shivers, arching her hips so her bare pussy brushes my cock.
Do it.
She moans, reaching down and stroking my length. I bite my lip as she squeezes my dick. I'm so fucking hard, I say through gritted teeth. Releasing me, I feel her hand beneath me. Looking down, I see her fingers gliding through her wetness. Her eyes on me. She smiles devilishly as she brings her fingers to my lips.
I am so wet for you, it's ridiculous.
She breathes, swiping the moisture over my bottom lip. I suck her fingertips into my mouth and watch her eyes grow wide. My cock pulses against her opening so hard it hurts. How do you want it? I ask, taking a nipple into my mouth. I suck it, rolling it with my tongue, as my other hand cups her other breast. She moans at the contact, raising her hips to meet mine again.
Just give it to me.
She begs, arching her back further. I flip her onto her belly and flatten my palm right above her pussy, raising her ass up in the air. She looks at me over her shoulder, a glimmer in her eye that goes straight to my cock. Hold on, baby, I say, touching the tip of my dick against the opening of her pussy. This is gonna be one hell of a ride. Chapter 26. Ty. Pulling up to the bathhouse, the little building miners use to change from street clothes to work clothes, I flip off the lights to the truck and sit in the spot marked second shift boss without getting out. My breath billows in front of me, hitting the quickly chilling windows and causing them to fog up. There's a sense of familiarity in the routine of doing this, my first day back to work. I've done it for years, after all. But the last time I saw this place, I was being carted out in an ambulance. Even though I know it'll be fine and I really do believe everything I said to Elon, it still has my stomach a little twisted. I watch as a car pulls up a few spots down and Pettis climbs out. He walks in front of my truck, never looking up at me, and enters the house. The light streams out the door, cutting a slice of halogen-induced sunshine over the mine mud that saturates the ground. How'd I get so fucking lucky? I mutter to myself, grabbing my lunchbox off the passenger seat. I get out and lock up and head inside the bathhouse. The atmosphere is somber as I enter, my 12-man crew counting me all present. The walls are a dingy yellow color that looks like piss. The floor is cement, chipped and stained and probably gray when it was poured decades ago. With the years of coal mud being trekked over it, it's now the color of tobacco spit. Cord looks up and smiles, fastening the last snap of his bibs. The mind tape that lays horizontally across the material reflects the lights above. "About time you showed up," he jokes. "Someone's gonna have to play nice with Pettis. They don't pay me enough for that." "Fuck off," I say, swallowing hard. I stick my lunch in my locker and start going through my gear. "The pre-shift report is in your inbox," Jig says, testing the batteries on his flashlight and helmet. They last one 10-hour shift, maybe a little more. We learn the hard way to make sure they're good and bright before you head to the shaft. Otherwise, you're fighting a shitty light for 10 hours in a place that's as dark and damp as your worst childhood nightmare. I nod, acknowledging the existence of the report, and step into my bibs. The guys chatter around me, easing into a role we've played most of our adult lives, good-naturedly ribbing each other, and I say a little prayer that it holds. Pettis isn't usually on our crew, and I'm not sure why he is this time. He's a poison to every team he's on, and nearly every foreman, myself included, has demanded he be removed at one point or another. "How long is he gonna make it?" Jiggs mumbles as he walks by. I shrug, knowing he means Pettis, but I don't know. I wonder the same thing. After this shit at Thoroughbreds, there's no way I'm keeping him with me. The crackle of my radio breaks my concentration. It brings a bolt of realism to the moment. "Shh! Wait, this is Percora. You get the report?" "Yeah," I say into the radio. I swipe it out of my box and scan it quickly. I see the equipment locations. Ceilings are bolted for the first half mile. We're mining the top and south ends. "Yep," Percora confirms. "Good to have you back, Wit. Try not to get crushed tonight, will ya?" "Go to hell, Percora," I say, shaking my head. The radio falls silent and I grab my flashlight. "You boys ready?" A chorus of mumbles rings out and we all make our way to the door. The wind picks up, a cold undertone to the breeze shearing across the parking lot as we head to the opening of the slope. Cord takes a big breath of air. "Ah, there's nothing like the smell of shit in the evening." Jiggs laughs. "The smell of that direct deposit next Friday is going to be worth it." "The things we do for money," Pettis chimes in. "Pettis?" Cord says, looking at me and waiting for some indication that he should be quiet. I don't give it to him. "The next 10 hours are going to go a whole lot fucking easier if you shut the fuck up."
"I didn't say anything to you, McCurry,"
Pettis fires back. "See, that's the thing," Cord says, standing tall over Pettis. "It doesn't matter if you speak to me. Just hearing your voice is enough to make me want to break you in half. So until Ty figures out how to get you off this crew, let's operate under the understanding that I have no problem busting you in the face. Again. And you won't do shit back." Pettis straightens his shoulders but wobbles. "What the fuck did I do to you?" "Think about it," Cord winks. "I'm sure somewhere inside that dense head of yours you'll figure it out." The air sizzles around us, the mood changing. The mind does that to you. Something about staring down a black abyss that leads you hundreds of feet beneath the surface of the earth in a slot just big enough to stand in will sober up the goofiest of men. Doesn't matter how many times you do it. Repetition doesn't help. It's an unnatural motion, a trip to hell every damn time. "You okay?" I ask Cord. His outburst was a little over the top, even being that it was directed at Pettis. "Yeah, just a lot of shit I'm thinking about. You know how it goes." "What about you?" I ask Jiggs. "Your head on straight?"
"I haven't slept in 2 nights. I fought with my wife for about 52 hours straight. Yeah, I'm great."
"Is she still talking about moving?"
"Fuck. She's on the phone with realtors, her mom, going through ads, trying to find me a job down there. I just can't get through to her."
"Her heart is in the right place," I say.
"I know."
he mutters, his head hanging. I just feel like everything's falling apart. The rails of the buggy scream as it hits the top. We greet the first four men to make it out before we look at each other. As foreman, I go first. Cord, Jigs, and Grunt, a guy that doesn't speak in words, just grunts, joins me in the buggy. No one says a word. Not that we could hear it anyway. With every foot we fall below the surface of the ground, my chest tightens a little more. The air gets a little damper. The darkness more suffocating. The sound of the equipment below louder. The shaft is narrow and low, just big enough for equipment to get in and get out. It feels like it shrinks as we sink farther into the earth. I close my eyes and picture Elin, wondering what she's doing. In my mind, she's curled up on her bed, her reading glasses covering her eyes, a stack of papers on her lap. She looks up at me and smiles, her hair falling over her shoulders. The equipment is still running, barking and howling, a hellish sound that makes perfect sense for the setting once we hit bottom. Reluctantly, I part my eyes and let them adjust to the absence of light. Climbing out of the cart, I nod to the next four to leave from the first shift, my boots sinking in the mud. It squishes around my weight, sliding up the bottom of my bibs. Fuck, I hiss, looking up to the otter, the foreman just getting off. It's wetter than fuck down here. Yeah, he says, his face so black from the soot and mud that I can only see the whites of his eyes. It's really fucking damp. I called up a few hours ago because I've not seen a hole this damn wet in my whole life. I pick up a boot and the mud falls off in globs. Ugh, this is gonna be fun. But hey, the otter says, smacking me on the back. We're back to work. Yeah, I say, letting out a half laugh. We're back to fucking work. Yowder goes off to wait for the buggy to come back down to pick up him and the last three guys. I find a dinner shack, a picnic table on a sled, and lay out my report. Ignoring the shrill of the machines and the dim light and the putrid smell of coal, I study our objective. That's gonna be hell, Jig says, clasping my shoulder with his hand. You ready for this, boss man? I just nod. Because there's no other way to put it. 400 feet below ground is a hell all of its own.
Chapter 27. Elin. 48, 49, 50. I watch as each minute ticks by. The clock primed to roll over to 4 a.m. My lids are heavy, my eyes burn, but they refuse to close. It's adrenaline, I'm sure. Ty didn't call once he left the house, although I was sure he would. He'd usually send a text from the bathhouse before they went down. But tonight, he didn't. I went to Lindsay's earlier in the evening, and she made nachos and we ate them in the nursery while we chose a paint color. I was surprised she's going to do a nursery with the way she's been talking about Florida. But I needed the distraction, so I didn't ask questions. Jigs has no opinion on decoration, only that the baby has a framed photo of his baseball hero, Lincoln Landry, on the wall somewhere in the room. We chose a really pretty dove gray and pale yellow that will be beautiful whether it's a boy or a girl, and easily accented with blue or pink as required. I love this, I say, holding the winning color sample against the wall. It's gonna be perfect. I love it too. She brushes a strand of hair off her shoulder. I know I've been a little crazy about moving and stuff. Yeah, you have. Why, Linz? She shrugs, her lips dipping. I just want what's best for this baby. I don't want to leave you. Tears well in her eyes. I don't want to leave Blown or Ty or Cord, but I'm afraid we'll stay here and not be able to put food on the table, and we can't afford to take risks like that. Not anymore. Will you just think about it, for my brother? She smiles through the tears glittering down her cheeks. I will. I just feel like this is what I have to do. You understand, don't you? I smile back, but don't answer because even though I get it, I don't. A smile touches my lips as I think of how Lindsay's belly is beginning to round. She's slathering on cocoa butter and praying for no stretch marks, and I just laughed. But in reality, I'd give anything for them. I think to how tiny I might have done our nursery and how big my belly would have been. I wonder what names we'd choose and if Ty would have rubbed my feet every night the way Jiggs does Lindsay's, even when they're fighting. Maybe someday, I whisper, rolling onto my side and closing my eyes.
Chapter 28. Ty, you don't know half the shit you think you know. I laugh, tipping my beer at Jiggs. Well, that's half again more than you, fucker, he jokes. Cord shakes his head. If either of you two knew anything, that truck would be fixed. How long y'all gonna be working on it? Too damn long, Jiggs groans. Cord and Jiggs get into the details of the truck in the barn out back. I bow out of the conversation and settle into the recliner in the middle of Jiggs's living room. Elin and Lindsay sit in the kitchen, hovered over a computer screen. A pile of brownies sit in front of them, the whole house smelling like baked goods. This is how it should be. My friends giving each other shit about life, a game on the television, and my wife sitting at the table with her best friend, talking babies while she wears my shirt and her hair is still ruffled from the quick makeout session we had in the garage. Every once in a while, she looks over her shoulder at me and catches me staring at her. We share a smile, one of those that half promises something more later, because fuck if she's not the prettiest girl I've ever seen, and half makes me feel like a teenager scoping out my crush. Taking a sip of my beer, I hear my name spoken beside me and I glance over at Jiggs. Did you hear any of that? He asks me. Nope. Cord wonders if there's a fuse that's bad. I glance at Cord. Maybe. We didn't check that yet. Now you got me wondering, Jiggs says, standing up. I follow suit. I'm gonna take a piss, Cord says. Then I'll meet you both out there. He disappears down the hall. I grab my jacket off the back of the couch while Jiggs heads to the coat closet by the door. Slipping on my coat, I head over to Elin. The computer is lit up with row after row of things I can't imagine a baby would ever need. Ever. What in the hell is that thing? I ask, gathering my wife's hair back in one hand. The strands are silky in my palm.
It's a breastfeeding cushion,
Lindsay starts to say before her phone rings. She glances down at it.
That's my mom. Do you mind if I answer? Go,
Elin tells her before tipping her head back so she's looking up at me.
You heading to the barn?
Yeah, just for a bit. You ready to go? She yawns.
Yeah, I'm tired.
You just want to go to bed with me, I tease.
Always.
Ready? Jiggs yells from the entryway. I kiss Elin on the forehead and make my way out to the front of the house.
Elin. I scroll through the website and add a few things to the favorites list for Lindsay to check out, clicking one last baby bib that says, My aunt rocks. I smile as I shut the lid to the computer. Stretching my arms over my head, I yawn again.
Hey.
A voice drawls out from behind me. I jump at the intrusion and twist to my seat. Cord, you scared me. I thought you went to the barn.
Sorry.
He laughs, shrugging on his jacket. He eyes me curiously.
What's going on with you these days?
I say, lifting and dropping my shoulders. Nothing new. What about you?
Nothing new over here.
Run into Becca lately? I hint.
No.
He chuckles.
I told you that wasn't going to happen.
He pulls a chair out across from me and sits, shaking his head. I watch him as he dazes off, his mind clearly somewhere else. Hey, I say. You okay?
Yeah.
He drops his hands on the table, the sound making a thud.
I feel lost.
His words spear me, and instinctively, I place my hand on top of his. A small smile graces his lips at the contact, and I wish I could jump up and hug him, but I'm afraid it would break the moment. Why do you feel that way?
You know how you said you always knew you were going to be a teacher? And how Ty just falls into coaching like it's what he was born to do? Or the way Lindsay smiles the whole time she's cutting your hair? Or the way Jiggs never stops trying to work on cars, even though we all know he can't fix them for shit?
Yeah? I laugh, watching the twinkle grow in his eyes.
I don't have that. Y'all have this passion for something, this...
He runs his hands through his hair like he's trying to grab words.
Something you were born to do. Something that was in your blood the day you were brought to this world. You all have a toolbox for life. I don't.
First of all, I say, tucking a leg under me and settling in for the long haul with this conversation. I believe you know how much of a mess my life has been, and I do believe it was you that set me straight. It was your tools I borrowed.
Life makes no sense to me.
Life doesn't make any sense to any of us, Court.
No, I mean, it really doesn't make sense to me. Nothing I've ever done seems like the right thing. I've never felt like I fit in, except with you guys. I've never felt a connection with a girl that's deeper than a fuck. No job or place feels like that's what I should do. Does that make sense?
Sighing, I reach my other hand across the table and place it over his. Look, maybe you just haven't found your path yet. But you have time to figure out what you were put on this earth to do and who you're supposed to love. You'll get it. He narrows his eyes, a smirk on his lips.
You think?
I know, I say, squeezing his hands before settling back in my chair. He studies me for a long minute, then two before leaning against the table. The light hanging above us shines on his face and catches on the watch on his wrist.
What else do you know?
He asks, raising his brow. As in...
Don't use your teacher voice with me.
He laughs. Well, it's what I use when I'm not understanding what you mean. I giggle.
As in, do you have any secrets or news you'd like to share with the class?
Laughing, I yawn yet again. No, not that I know of. Why? Do you know something I should know? He peers at me through his long lashes.
Excuse me for asking, but since you're so in my business, I'll jump into yours. Are you pregnant?
What? I gasp, sitting up straight. No, of course not. Why would you ask me that?
You've yawned all night.
Yeah, I'm tired. I can't sleep when Ty's at work.
Your face is flushed.
It's hot as hell in here.
And?
He says.
You didn't touch your dinner tonight.
Because the hamburger was pink and I can't eat it when it's mooing at me, I say with a huff, as I rise from the table. I start to say something else, that I'd rather not discuss the topic of pregnancy with him. It dredges up things I'd rather not talk about. But the more I think about it, the more a little bubble of uncertainty sits in the middle of my stomach. I race through a calendar in my head, trying to figure out when to expect my period. It's never exactly on time, and with the stress of everything, I haven't paid a lot of attention. My heartbeat starts to quicken, and I feel my cheeks heat further. Cord's chair pushes out, the legs dragging against the floor. I look up at him, and he smiles. Cord? My mouth goes dry before I can say anything else.
Reading people is a remnant of being a foster kid. You learn to read people, notice little things, because if you don't, you'll get your ass kicked.
He shrugs.
If you are, look, congratulations. And if you're not, it will happen.
He says, tossing the hood of his jacket over his head.
Now I'm going to go show those boys how to work on a truck.
He winks and heads out the front door, leaving me in the kitchen with my jaw hanging wide open. Chapter 29. Elin. What? I look up as Lindsay rounds the corner. Her hand still holds her phone as her face mars with confusion. Oh, what? She asks again. I laugh, a sound of disbelief married with anxiety. I'm not sure.
Dude, you're scaring me. She says, coming towards me. What's the matter, Elin?
My hand trembles as I raise it from my side. The bangle bracelets on my wrist rustle prettily together. As if on autopilot, it heads to my stomach, but I stop it, hesitate before it lands. With a deep breath, I watch my palm meet my stomach. My eyes fly to hers. Linz?
Yeah?
I don't know if this is even possible. I mean, it's possible, technically, I say hurriedly, the brownie I ate starting to creep up my throat. But I'm not sure.
Elin?
She closes the distance between us, her eyes drifting to my hand on my stomach. I giggle nervously.
I'm probably not, I say. I mean, I never thought about it, but maybe.
Oh my God. She breathes, her eyes going wide.
Seriously? You think so?
I don't know. I don't even know if I want to know.
Of course you do, she says, dragging me down the hall. I mean, I do, so do you do. Oh my God! This would be the best thing ever!
My heart squeezes, nearly cutting off my oxygen. knowing that it would be the best thing ever for the both of us to have babies with the men we love, but also knowing that if things had worked out, we already would be on that path makes a hot set of tears sting my eyes. We reached the bathroom door, the one where I ran into Ty the night of the bonfire. Lindsay spins me around to face her.
Do you want to know? She demands. I mean, you'll have to know sooner or later, and I want to force you in there to take a test, but I also know how personal this is, and maybe you want to wait and do it with Ty?
I imagine his face if it turns out I'm not. Looking down at my stomach for a few moments before up at my friend again, I say, let's do it. Lindsay lets out a squeal and flips on the light. She rummages through a cabinet. No words may come out of my mouth, but a million emotions swirl together in my body, creating a beautiful, dangerous chaos that I'm not sure I can navigate.
Ta-da!
She exclaims, standing up and wielding a little box. It rattles as she shakes it.
I knew I had an extra!
She extends her hand, offering me the device that will either change my world or ruin an excitement that, despite my best efforts, has already started to take root.
Am I really going to do this? I ask, taking the box.
Yes, you are. You have to know.
Well, get out of here and let me pee on the stick.
Lindsay laughs, bouncing on the balls of her feet.
Okay, but I want to watch it turn with you, okay? I mean, I don't care, even if that's gross.
Out! I laugh, shoving her towards the door gently. Once she's gone, I shut it and lock it for good measure. The package ripped open, I toss the box in directions away. Forcing a swallow, I study the little white gadget. Be good to me, I whisper, pulling down my pants. It takes forever to actually urinate, and I try to guide the thin piece of plastic into the stream. Finishing up and getting myself together, I sit on the counter and refuse to look at it. I can't. A ball sits in my throat as I open the door and face my friend. I think I might pass out.
Well? She asks.
I press my lips together and fight to hold back tears. Even though I didn't expect this situation, now that I'm in it, I want it. Oh, dear Lord, do I want it. I've never wanted anything more than this.
Let's look, she whispers, laying a hand along my shoulders.
In unison, we turn. Together we suck in a hasty breath. At the same time we fall into each other's arms, tears dotting our faces.
It's positive!
Lindsay gushes in my hair. A reply won't come past the sobs racking my body. My knees shake, a smile etched across my cheeks as I grab at the counter to hold myself up. I place both hands on my belly and look down. It looks the same as it always does. Ty's shirt hanging loosely over the round curve from the freshman 15 I never lost. Still, I feel it. A sense of wonder, a feeling of fullness that it's not just me right now. It's us. A baby. I'm pregnant, I whisper, not to anyone in particular. My head snaps up.
When was the last time I drank?
Lindsay laughs and places her hand on my belly, too.
They'll grow up together just a few months apart, my girl and your boy.
What? I laugh. She shrugs. Ty would be awesome with a boy. When are you telling him? I want to tell him now. I want to run to the barn and jump on him, kissing him senseless as I try to put this into words. But Jiggs is there, and Cord too, and after everything. My stomach flip-flops as ice water fills my veins, and I shiver at the thought of losing yet another baby. They're off after tomorrow, I say, thinking of their schedule. They'll be home for 2 days.
You want to wait till then? Can you manage to keep it a secret for another whole 24 hours?
I imagine seeing him in bed, his early morning hair all ruffled. I'll come in with his coffee and watch him give me a sleepy smile. I'll climb in bed beside him and nuzzle against his solid chest and give him the news. Just the two of us. Besides, it'll give me time to get my head wrapped around this and to convince myself it's going to be okay.
I'll try, I say. I really want it to be special. Maybe I'll play a game or something, I don't know. But I want it to be something we remember. Maybe if I do it different, we'll have different results.
Lindsay makes a face at my insinuation, but chooses to disregard it.
So, I have to keep it a secret? She moans instead. Oh, I'm so bad at that.
Don't you dare tell a soul, not even Jiggs, I warn her, my finger wagging in her face. I mean it, Linz.
I won't, she says, rolling her eyes. Of course I won't. But Elin, you're pregnant.
I'm pregnant, I whisper. The door opens and closes, the sound echoing through the house. We look at each other as Lindsay heads for the bathroom door.
I'll go stall them. Clean up your face or Ty's gonna know something's wrong, Lindsay instructs.
Lindsay?
What?
She hisses.
You are so not moving to Florida.
She gives me a look. One I'm not totally convinced means she's going to stop the push for the move. But I'm too amped up to think about it. It's a conversation for another day. I splash some water on my face and pat it dry, tucking the test in toilet paper. I stash it in a cabinet and make a mental note to come back and get it later. I head down the hall, trying not to touch my stomach and not smile like the loon I feel. Everyone is standing in the kitchen when I arrive.
You okay?
Ty asks, immediately reaching for me. His brows are pulled together.
I'm good. Lindsay just, was telling me about the baby, and I just got a little worked up. It's so exciting, you know?
I glance at my brother, and he's oblivious, devouring the rest of the brownies on the plate. But when I look at Cord, he's grinning. As subtly as I can, I nod. He winks, his cheeks breaking into a wide smile.
Ready to go?
Ty asks, pulling me into his side. I place a hand on his back, feeling his raised scar through the material of his shirt. He's here. I'm here. And maybe, finally, so is our baby.
Chapter 30. Ty. Slate-colored clouds roll overhead, a low rumble of thunder noticeable every few minutes. The ground sloshes beneath my boots as I make my way to the entrance of the mine, alongside Jiggs and Cord.
Not a bad first week back, Jiggs notes, swinging his lunchbox beside him.
We met Goal. Nothing broke down.
And I didn't kill Pettis.
Cord laughs. I reported his bullshit from last night, I note, thinking back to 12 hours before. No miner can go any farther than we've prepped for. Fucker has a death wish, and while I'm not entirely broken-hearted about that, I kinda want to live.
Pfft, me too, Jiggs snorts. I got a kid on the way, man. You know, I'd like to be around to teach him how to make a jump shot like his dad.
Better let Uncle Ty teach him that if you want him to be the best. I joke as I spy Pettis and Grunt up ahead. I have a feeling Pettis is going to get fired tonight once we're done. When I reported him this morning, Percora said he'd take care of it. You know what it'll look like if something goes wrong right after we reopen.
Yeah, it'll close us down and we'll go without a paycheck again, Cord says, tinkering with his flashlight.
I think this thing has a loose cable or something. It keeps going off. He shakes it in the air and mutters under his breath.
Shit's breaking already. Jiggs laughs as we approach Pettis and Grunt. You boys ready?
Grunt makes the sound he makes that means yes, no, and maybe. Pettis nods, eyeing us all warily. I watch the cart come up the ramp. Grunt and Pettis get in first and descend into the darkness. Let's do this and go home for a couple of days, guys.
Elin, don't forget your gloves. I rush to the door and hand a pair of bright red gloves to one of my favorite students. It's getting cold out there, big guy. You'll need these.
Thanks, Mrs. Witt.
He grins a wide, toothy smile. I ruffle his hair before he turns and joins the line to head out to recess. Closing the door softly behind me, I let out a long, tired breath. I tossed and turned last night, finally just giving up around 1 a.m. I sat in the living room and planned out how to tell Ty about the baby. It was the excitement of knowing that kept me up. By the time I fell asleep and woke up, the adrenaline had worn off, and I was sluggish. When I realized Ty wasn't home yet, the adrenaline kicked back in. Turns out his crew was working over, which isn't out of the ordinary. A simple call to the Blackwater office, something I've done a number of times over the years, answered that. Still, it started my day off wobbly, and the roller coaster of highs and lows is taking its toll.
Ouch! I mutter, stopping in my tracks. One hand goes onto a student's desk as I bend forward and squeeze my eyes shut. A rumble,
Not quite a cramp, but not a cramp either. Tightens in my belly. Breathe, I tell myself, concentrating on the rising and falling of my chest. My heartbeat races as much as I try to steady it. No, I whisper. No. I need my husband. I need to hear his voice. Quick steps lead me to my purse and my bottom desk drawer. Shaky hands tug at the zipper and retrieve my cell. Let him be home, I whisper as another tug rips through my insides. Please, let him be home. Tears build in the corners of my eyes as I unlock my screen to see no missed calls and no texts. It's 10 o'clock. 7 minutes pass, to be exact, and I can't fight the flicker in the back of my mind that it's odd I haven't heard from him at all. I tell myself he's probably just exhausted, and grabbed a shower and fell asleep as I find his name in my favorites list. My finger is on his picture, my love printed across the top, ready to drop and place the call, when a knock reverberates through my classroom. Chapter 31. Elin. My hand hovers over his name, and I teeter on the verge of not answering the door and going through with the call. That answer is made for me. It pushes open, and Mr. Walters, the elementary school principal, pokes his head around it.
Elin?
Blowing out a hasty breath, I sit the phone down. Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Walters. Can I help you? He steps through the opening. I suck in a soft breath. Gloom is written all over his tight features. He clears his throat and stands tall.
I don't really know how to say this, Elin, but can you get your things and come with me, please?
Sure. Is everything all right? A million thoughts run through my head. Have I been fired? Has someone filed a report against me?
Blackwater Cole called the office a few minutes ago and asked that you come to their headquarters immediately.
He says softly. Why would they do that? I'm afraid to ask, but even more terrified of the answer. When Ty got hurt, they called my phone and asked me to meet the ambulance at the hospital. My phone hasn't rung today. I check it again. No missed calls. Why would they call the school? It occurs to me, just as a slight quiver to Mr. Walters' composure sets in, that I might prefer that question to remain unanswered. My legs go numb, as do my hands that reach furiously for my things. He's talking, but I'm mentally removed from this moment. It's some sort of survival mechanism, I'm sure. If I can just come up with a decent reason, it will make it all right. Maybe Ty tested positive for drugs and I need to pick him up? Instantly, I'm relieved at the idea. That we can deal with. Yes, I'll pick him up and rip him a new asshole and make him get professional help this time. Real help, not some self-detox in the...
Accident, Elin.
My head jerks to the front of the room. What did you say? He's watching me like you look at the family standing beside a casket. Like you want to seem all warm and familial. Yet you're afraid in their current state, they may completely melt down. It's a look that's friendly, yet mixed with sadness, and one I hate. It's also one I can't process at the moment because my mind is stuck on that one little word. Accident? I ask, my voice too loud for the room. What accident? Who's been in an accident?
I'm honestly not sure,
he says, and I believe him. The lines on his face soften.
They just ask that you arrive as quickly as possible. Can I give you a ride?
The car flies down the highway, past the fields now waiting on spring to arrive for the next crop. Nothing looks out of the ordinary. Nothing feels different than any other Thursday morning. Except I'm in Mr. Walter's car, going at a wild rate of speed as I try to get a hold of Lindsay. Every time it rings, it goes dead. Shit, I say, ending yet another failed attempt at getting through. I can't take this. My head falls in my hands and I force air in and then out of my lungs. My heart is beating violently in my chest as every worst-case scenario fires through my brain.
Elin, if it was anything incredibly wrong, don't you think we'd have heard it on the radio? Or gotten some wind of it in the media?
His hand lands on my knee and I stare at it. It feels heavy, the weight of it sitting awkwardly on my leg. He withdraws it quickly. I don't know, I reply, wishing he'd shut up. I know he's trying to help, but I need to think. I scroll to Ty's name and call his number for the 100th time. Straight to voicemail,
My hand shakes uncontrollably as I concentrate on my breathing and I try to convince myself this is going to be okay. Feeling my phone buzz in my hand, I jump. Hey! I say as soon as I swipe it on. Lindsay, where are you? Heading to Blackwater! The one word etched with a sob so deep, so distressing, it shatters what's left of my nerves. It must be Jake's. They wouldn't call her if something happened to Ty. My breathing becomes jagged as I see my brother's face. Hear his stupid laugh. Imagine his eyes lighting up as he teased me growing up about what I got for Christmas. I nearly drop my phone. Dear God, let him be okay. Let them all be okay. Let this be some stupid meeting about healthcare or 401ks. What did they say? I ask, my voice crackling with the tears I'm trying desperately to hold back. Did they tell you anything? No, they just said I needed to come to the headquarters as soon as possible. Tears roll down my cheeks as she cries into the phone. Are you alone? I ask. Yes, I'm driving myself. I'm on 5 Mile Road now, almost there. I think you're just ahead of me, I say, spotting a blue car a mile or so up the road. Why are you out here? She asks, sniffling. Did they call you too? I nod, then realize she can't see me. Yes. Oh, Elin, she says, sobbing once again. What can it be? Lynn, stop. We'll be there in just a minute. Maybe it's nothing, I offer. Although I don't believe it. Not the way this has gone down. I feel like I'm going to be sick. I'm here. I'll see you inside, she says and disconnects the call. I look at Mr. Walters, and he offers me a sad smile, so I look away. Pity isn't wanted. There's no reason for it. Everything is going to be okay. Chapter 32. Elin. We pull to the front door, and I spy Lindsay's car in the emergency lane, but I don't see her anywhere.
Do you want me to come in with you?
Mr. Walters asks. No. I'll be fine, thanks for the ride, I say, jumping out of the car before it's to a complete stop, and heading for the glass doors with Blackwater Coal printed in black across the front. The warm air smacks me in the face, making my perceived suffocation even more real. I look frantically at the faces in front of me. Men, women, some in suits, some in mining vests, some wearing glasses, others hard hats. The one thing in common. The look of devastation and fear on their faces. I'm Elin Witt, I sputter, slamming my purse on the counter. Someone called? For a brief moment, no one moves. I look from face to face, willing one of them to step forward and give me answers.
Follow me, Mrs. Witt,
a large burly man says. He starts down a long hall, turning to me as he walks.
I'm Vernon Trent, Chief Officer of Safety with Blackwater.
What's going on? I ask. Peering through windows into offices as we come to the end of the hallway. I don't see Lindsay. I need to find my sister-in-law. She got a call, too? A hiccup catches the rest of my words. Vernon stops at the doorway to a closed room.
She's in here. Please, follow me.
This better be some stupid meeting about insurance. The door opens, and I spy Lindsay pacing along the far wall. She turns as I enter, her mascara-streaked face racing towards me. I catch her in a hug. Our arms winding around one another. I can't cry. I won't. Everything is going to be okay. It's fine, I say as promisingly as I can. Shh, everything will be fine. Brushing her hair away from her face, I pull back to see her face. Have they told you anything? Not yet.
Ladies.
Vernon's voice fills the room, a commanding yet kind tone that has us turning on our heels. He's standing at the front of the room, flanked by a woman in a navy blue skirt and jacket, pearls and her hair curled like a 50s housewife. A man stands on his other side in a crumpled-looking black suit and tie. None of them look pleased to be standing in front of us. My stomach drops to the floor and I squeeze Lindsay as tightly as I can. Vernon looks at his associates before clearing his throat.
We have some bad news. Please, take a seat. Chapter 33. Ty. My eyes open, I cough immediately, gasping for air, as my sight takes in an awkward, unfamiliar scene. The lamp on my helmet illuminates the floor of the mine and the dust that's permeating the air above it. What the fuck? My face is pressed into the wet, slimy ground, and when I lift it, a sucking sound shatters the silence of the darkness around me. Shivering, I try to get my bearings. When a memory rips through my mind,